Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized, and with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com, that's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
It's the truth, even if it didn't happen. Ken Kesey.
Absolutely. No, some 4 days was that I really wanted it. We could do it. I created the spreadsheet, and then I calculated, of course, there's the distance. They added in the vert. They added in how difficult that section is, the trail, and put a little multiplier in there. So I had the different checkpoints, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it was going to go sub 4 days, which has been a full day. The record, near as I could tell, was five. And we wanted to take an entire day off that. And we got walloped by a storm on Tuolumne Pass. It was just crushed. I mean, you couldn't even stay outside on it. They closed the pass, by the way. They closed Tioga Pass, the highway. And so we had to lay up for the night and just jogged it in the next day. So we came in at like 4.5 days.
I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod.
Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Lace up those boots and sling on the pack for a romp through trails, short and long. With your host and Renaissance man, Doc, it's time to embrace the suck.
Welcome back to another week on the trail. I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Let's start off with a reminder. If you are enjoying the podcast, take just a minute, help us out, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're not enjoying the pod, well, just go ahead and keep that to yourself. All right. I absolutely love when one of my listeners reaches out and suggests a guest. And that's exactly what happened with this episode. A listener with the Instagram handle stat.trail reached out and pointed me in the direction of this week's guest. After tracking down his email, I reached out to the creator of the FKT, Buzz Burrell, and here we are. Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod, Buzz.
Thanks, Doc. Appreciate it.
Do you get a lot of requests to come on to podcasts?
Well, I hosted my own, the fastest known podcast, 180 episodes every Friday at 6 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. But then we sold the business, Fastest Known Time, to Outside Interactive. Then a week after that, I instinctually went on the website to see what was there. There was no 181. The next week, the next Friday, there was still no 181. Then they reran one of the old ones. So it's kind of interesting. There's a quick transition here, but on that very first Friday, I was the guest on two other podcasts. So I'm kind of on the other end of the microphone right now, which is, you know, a little easier because, Doc, you had to do some homework. You had to prepare. You had to get it together. I now don't have to do anything. I can just sit here and have a good time.
That's right. No surprises. I'm not going to ask you any questions you don't know about. So we're good to go.
Well, you should give it a shot, don't you think? I mean, the listeners want to be surprised. They, you know, it's like I'm no Will Smith, thank goodness. But yeah, let's let it rip.
Okay. And you know what? To that end, I do have a surprise for you right off the bat here. But before we get to that, we go by trail names here on the podcast. I know that you are known for, you know, trail running and endurance running. Have you ever done any trail work, any in terms of through hiking or camping or hiking?
Yeah, I've done a lot of. Yeah, well, I did my first overnight backpacking trip in 1963. So I think I'm dating myself a little bit here by saying that. But yeah, I've done plenty of hiking, plenty of backpacking.
Okay, and so is Buzz a trail name? Or
no, okay, no. I mean that'd be cool. That'd be very cool. But no, my parents named me Buzz at birth.
Okay, for Buzz Aldrin, who was in the news. He was not. That was before he was in the. That was after he was in the news. Sorry.
Yeah. I'm an old guy, Doc. I mean, you're kind of good job. You corrected yourself. You said, "Whoa, wait a minute. Who am I talking to here?" Right. No, not for Buzz Aldrin.
Okay, so. Even though Buzz is not a trail name, it sounds like a trail name and it's a cool name. And so you're Buzz, I'm Doc. That's what we'll go with the podcast tonight.
Thanks, Doc.
Okay. Have you had a chance to listen to the podcast, Buzz?
I have not. I'm currently traveling. I'm on a 2.5 week trip to California. So pardon me, I have not.
No worries at all. I only ask because I want to make sure that you're aware of a regular segment we do. Appears towards the end of the episode, and it's called the Pro Tip Insight of the Week. And that's where I will turn to you and ask you to share some trail wisdom, some outdoor wisdom to make our listeners' next outdoor experience even better. So don't be surprised when we get there.
Okay. Thanks for the heads up.
Okay. Now here is the surprise. You don't know about this.
It's time for a current event.
Occasionally, I will I'll scan through the headlines and I'll look for something on the day of an interview and a current event, let's call it, and kind of get your reaction. And I found something today in the headlines that I thought is like right up your alley. And it has to do with this year's Barkley Marathons.
Yes.
Are you aware of the Barkley Marathons? Familiar with them?
I think the name rings a bell.
Okay. So he knows. I can tell he knows. So this year there were no finishers for the Barkley Marathons. This is the fifth year in a row with no finishers. And for our listeners out there who are unfamiliar, I find this hard to believe because if they're tuning in and they've listened to me before, I talk occasionally about the Barkley Marathons because I'm a little bit obsessed with that. But if you're tuning in, you have no idea what the Barkley Marathons is, and you think it's just another marathon, you're thinking, wow, there's no finishers. How can that be? Well, it is one of the most unusual races you will come across. And so fifth year in a row with no finishers, it's been in existence for, I think, 30, 35 years. And there's only been, I think, 15 or 16 finishers in that time period. So
I thought it was 15, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, Laz Lake, Gary Cantrell, the creator of the race, he did something a little bit different this year. He started it 3 weeks early. Instead of it starting around April 1st, it was closer to, I think, March 10th, I think it was. And he started during a weekday. I think it was a Tuesday start. And the field was mostly international folks who could not compete the year before because of COVID restrictions and COVID issues. So it was primarily an international field, but only five runners started the fun run loop this year, which is the third loop of potential five.
That's more than the previous year.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Saying.
Now, Buzz, any interest at all, you know, in participating in the Barkley as in your history? Do you ever get your curiosity piqued by that and say, you know what, that would be a lot of fun?
No. No, anyone who says that, I don't think quite grasps the concept. By the way, Gary Cantrell was on the fastest known podcast about 6 weeks ago, if you want to look that up.
Oh, nice.
He's an interesting guy. He's crazy. probably one of the most unhealthy people you've ever met in your life, and a savant. I mean, he's literally brilliant person. And he's, of course, it's a very low bar, but he's the most creative person in the entire sport of ultra running. Mm-hmm. <Isn't saying that laughs> much. But he qualifies. I mean, he's an amazing person. He's a dramatic thinker. So pay attention to what he's saying. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's the Barclay, as you said, Doc, but also there's Biggs Backyard Ultra, which I think will be his enduring legacy. Mm-hmm. Barclay has three movies made on it. You can look them up. Mm-hmm. They're very good movies, basically. But Biggs Backyard, I think, is going to be his enduring legacy. And he does something else. He doesn't think like anybody else does. But personally, no, I'm not into Sawbrush. I'm not into the mud. I'm not into the whole thing. I don't really like to suffer, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, it's a suffer fest. Yes,
it is. I kind of like to have fun. I'm sorry. It's I have a good time when I go out.
Yeah, I've had a few folks. I've had a few competitors in the Barclays who have come on the podcast and shared a little bit of their experience. And, you know, you're talking about world-class athletes who, you know, Mike Wardian, fantastic ultra runner. And he ended up, you know, after one, I don't think he completed a loop. He ended up in a cave, suffering from hypothermia and trying to survive out there. I mean, it's just absolutely brutal.
Right. Now it's, I'd like to also point out that, of course, I used to run Ultimate Direction. That was my brand. And the last, is it four or the last five people to finish Barclay have used the UD Ultra Vest. So that's kind of a minor little. So people want to finish Barclay. If you want to continue the tradition, you got to use an Ultimate Direction Ultra Vest. Of course, talk about Jared Campbell. And then John Kelly used one also. And John, of course, went to the UK, where he's just been knocking it out of the park, by the way. He's just been doing just insane things over there. So he established an FKT in the Pennine way. So the expat Yankees, well, he can't call me Yankees from Tennessee. The expat American is doing well in the UK, and Jared didn't go back this year. But Jasmine Paris from the UK came over and was the first woman to finish the fun run. And I've forgotten how many years.
A decade. That was another one of my points. You stole my thunder. That's good though.
Sorry.
Nice. No, all good. All good. The funny part to me was that only two of the five runners who started the fun run were able to start a fourth loop, Carol Sabe and Greg Hamilton. And to tell you how difficult it is out there, you're not only battling the elements, you're not only battling the elevation and time, you're also battling sleep. I mean, you are sleep deprived because there is a time limit, and you're going constantly. And so to show you how bad it is, Sabe, he ran into navigation problems and ended up getting lost and asking directions from a trash can. He found himself talking to a trash can, and the trash can would not give up which direction he should go. And he realized, oh, this is a trash can.
We could talk about Barclay forever because it is an interesting topic. I was somewhat dismissive, to be perfectly honest, but then Jared got into it. Jared really threw down, and he really informed me. So I changed my tune on it. I came to understand really what it was all about. And the way Jared described it to me is it's a next level type thing. You get to the place where you do not make a decision whether you're going to continue or not. If you're having to make a decision, you're out. You see what I mean?
Yes.
You need to be in this place of total commitment and a total letting go at the same time, which very, very few people can do. So the year before that, John Kelly finished, he started the fifth loop. He made it 400 meters up the trail and just did a face plant. But he walked out of that aid station. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't quit. He didn't exactly quit. He didn't make it, but he didn't quit. And so that's kind of what it takes, I think.
Yeah. I've only seen two of the three movies. So I need to find the third title. I've seen The Race That Eats Its Young and Where Dreams Go to Die. But I'm not sure.
Hopefully I'm not mistaken. Those are two of the classics, Doc.
Yeah.
Hopefully maybe there is only two and I've forgotten about it. I don't know.
Well, I'll do my research.
Yeah, you do. Thank you.
But those two are like watching a train wreck. You cannot turn away. It is fascinating. It is painful. And you just feel so bad for some of these competitors. So
the must bring gear review.
All right. Hey, another segment we do is the Must Bring Gear Review, sponsored by the ultralight backpacking gear company, Six Moon Designs. Wow. And you and I had talked about possibly, you know, I wondered if we needed to alter this to modify the trail running, or if you're okay with backpacking or through hiking, and you indicated you have that experience. So we're going to leave it with backpacking here. So here's how it works. If you were to let a stranger pack your bag with pretty much generic gear for a multi-day hike, what is the one specific piece of gear you would insist on being packed? And if you've got a particular brand for that specific piece of gear, even better. So Buzz, what is your must bring piece of gear?
Well, first I would throw everything out that they put in if it's generic and put in other stuff, but I'll answer your question more directly than that. Oh, it's the iPhone. It's a no-brainer. Sure. Because with the iPhone, you can navigate. You know, you presumably laid out your route on CalTopo. You've imported it into Gaia GPS. And so you got this little blinking blue dot. You know exactly where you are. And of course, you can take photos. You can listen to music. You can call for help. You can connect it with your Garmin Mini or your Solio. So the iPhone is an easy answer.
Okay, that took a different direction. You said you'd empty the bag out. I thought this was going to be kind of a reference to your credit card adventures that we're going to talk about a little bit later, where you know you're minimalist. Get rid of everything. I don't need a backpack. Forget it. I'm just going.
Right. Correct. Well, you said generic. You see,
as so I did.
You said generic. It's like, because you know, if you walk into REI, you get that little piece of paper that said, "Do this, you know, whatever those little 10-point lists are, I think are just bogus. I don't do any of them. You want to go to Adventure Allen or AndrewSkirka.com, places like that. That's where the incredible and free information is. So AndrewSkirka.com or Adventure Allen. Pardon me, but they're free, so you might as well get the straight scoop.
Absolutely. And we don't mind name drops like that when you are sharing resources with our listeners out there. These are great resources.
It's the hiking pole.
Another segment we do is something we call the hiking pole. And I always take time to explain the hiking pole. It's not the pole that you hold in your hand, P-O-L-E. It's pole as in survey. It's my creation. I think it's kind of a clever turn of phrase. I always take the time to point that out because my infrequent co-host Chopper thinks it's hilarious that the guests never react when I explain it to him. So you can maintain that form.
Okay.
Okay. So these are seven questions I'm going to ask to help me rank you on a scale from 1 to 100 on the crazy scale, with 100 being completely sane and 1 being absolutely bonkers.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm not sure what I'm aspiring to. Yeah. So should I be trying to get to 100 or should I be trying to get to 0?
So do you have any long trail experience under your belt? This is not part of the hiking pole, by the way. It's just background information. Like, have you hiked the PCT or the AT, you know, something over 1,000 miles?
No, I tend to like 6 days. Six days, I'm good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I only ask because there's an automatic 20-point deduction if you are a long trail hiker, because, you know, you have to be a little bit crazy to undertake that kind of venture.
Well, you have to either be old or young.
That's right.
To know it in between, right?
You got to have that
before
that
you get a job or after you've had a job.
That's right.
That's kind of.
Now, yeah, I'm going to give you a score after these seven questions, but then as the episode goes on, as more of your sanity or insanity is revealed, the score may change throughout the episode. So,
okay.
First question: trekking poles or no?
Absolutely, of course, no brainer. The science in trekking poles is very clear. They really work. They add power. They add stability. You can fend off wildlife, make it easy to cross creeks. And if you're pitching a tarp, you got to have them anyway. So yeah, of course.
Buzz, that's a very sane answer.
Oops. Hopefully that's good. Maybe it's bad.
All right. Boots or trail runners?
Same thing. Boots are not a thing. I mean, I've climbed Aconcagua. It's almost 7,000 meters high. It's 23,841 feet high. I was using trail runners. You know, I was a Gore-Tex trail runner, and I put those little heat packs in it, but boots are just not a thing. I use crampons in my trail runners. I use ice axe sometimes, et cetera, et cetera. Boots are not a thing, in my opinion. I don't think anyone should ever use them, period. Definitive. Except for skiing. for skiing you should choose, though.
Definitive statement right there. And let me just take a little side path here, because I've been on top of Whitney a couple of times, 14,505, and the air is rare up there. I mean, I was moving slow up there. You know, you would walk 50 yards and then take a, a 5 minute break and then continue. What is the air like at 22,000 feet?
A lot less.
Yeah.
So it depends on the climatic regime at that point in time. But if you're in a high pressure area, you're about 40% less oxygen at 14. So if you go above 23,000 feet, again, depending on your high or low pressure, you have a lot less O2 saturation in the atmosphere. But it's also El Viento Blanco and Aconcagua. It's windy, the white clouds, so it can be cold. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's not a lot of oxygen.
All right, back to the poll. Your shelter system, tent, tarp, hammock, or cowboy camping?
Bivy. Oops, I did none of the above. Hopefully that's okay. I mean, if I'm up in the winds, if I'm in some place where, you get some serious weather, I definitely like tents. I like the security, the protection, things like that. Hammocks, I just, oh man, they're so uncomfortable. Can't handle that. Cowboy camping, I definitely have done that. Mm-hmm. If you got really good weather, but basically a bivy, you're under 16 ounces. You need something underneath you anyway. If the wind comes up just for dust and dew. You get a clear night, dew comes down, the bivy, you can shake it off your sleeping bag. So I'm a bivy guy. Sorry.
Bivy guy. Now, I've tried bivy. I took that on a couple of trips. And when I ran into inclement weather in the afternoons, when we hit camp, I ran it, it started raining. I didn't look forward to getting into the bivy to get out of the rain, where people could get into their tents, right? And kind of have a little space, but just kind of laying there in the bivy kind of drove me nuts.
Correct. Right. So I do a lot in the desert. So that's a good response, Doc, because if I'm going up in the winds or someplace like that, I use a tent because it weighs a little bit more. The hardcore people use a tarp, but gosh, if the wind blows, a tarp isn't that much fun. If you get mosquitoes, it's way not fun. So a tent to me is just fine. There's really lightweight tents. But if I'm going out in the desert, I'm just looking at the weather report. I get out. Remember our first piece of gear, you get out the phone. Forecasts are pretty good. And so I use a bivy. But like you said, if it's going to rain, it's not happening. It's just going to be misery.
Yeah. And also a pro tip of my own here from past experience, don't zip the bivy all the way shut at night when you go to sleep. I woke up in the middle of the night gasping for air and I unzipped. I said, what is going on? Am I sick? Is this altitude? What's going on? And then I read the label inside the bivy with my headlamp, and it said, it was my iPhone light, and said, danger of suffocation, do not zip up all the way. And I thought, how can someone make a product that seals up all the way? And the intent is not to seal it up all the way.
It's not childproof. Oh, well. Yeah. Well, Ultimate Direction, we made a very cool bivy. It had these two ultra light hoops. So the whole thing just kind of laid down, you're like regular bivvies, but over your face, you had this X hoop system. So the UD bivy was world class, in my opinion. So you got around that issue.
Nice. All right. Sleep system, sleeping bag or quilt?
Quilts. I'm not opinionated, am I?
No, not at all.
Okay, good. I just want to check in here. I don't understand quilts. You're saving 4 ounces and they're extraordinarily drafty. So a sleeping bag is by far the most efficient thing. Okay, you're sitting on top of 4 ounces of down, which isn't that big of a deal compared with the draft. The quilt to me would be nice because it's more comfortable. You can roll around and you can get a second person underneath it, which is a big advantage. But if that's not what you're doing, definitely sleeping bag.
Okay. Now, this next question, very important, Buzz. This is where the biggest point deduction usually comes. So be careful here.
Okay.
All right. Stove, cold soak, or stoveless?
Gosh, I'm going to do my little nuanced reply. Darn, sorry about that. But this is true. I'm not trying to, dodge the question or anything. But 1 to 2 days, I'm stoveless.
Okay.
3 and up, I'm stove.
Okay.
That's just kind of how I roll, because 1 to 2, I'm going to just take bread and cheese, dried fruit and nuts. I'm just going to roll. And as soon as it's too dark to see, I'm just going to lay down. right? Just to eat a bite of bread. Well, 3 days and up, 3 nights, I should, not days, 3 nights and up, then it becomes a little more efficient because you can get your freeze-dried food a little bit lighter than you can just with no stove. But a cold soak, I don't do that, except like granola, rolled oats in the morning. But for dinner, I don't cold soak.
Right. Right. So even in your nuanced response there with your various options, you avoided the big point deduction of, you know, I am totally a cold soaker and that is the best thing to do. I am not. I think that is absolutely crazy. I've given it a shot. I've given it a legitimate shot and I can't take it. So.
Well, you could add wildcraft. That would be then you could get some major point deduction. Someone said, I just eat roots and berries. You had to add that as one of the questions.
That's an option. Yes, I need to add that as an option. Good point. You ever watch the show on the History Channel Alone?
No.
Oh, they drop these people out in the middle of nowhere. They're separate from each other. They have to stay in their zone, so they never interact with each other. So they don't know who's out there still and who's not. And the winner is the person who stays out the longest. And it's, you know, all bushcraft and staying out there in the elements. And it's usually like in Canada somewhere. Next to a lake in very extreme temperatures in the winter. And so a lot of wildcraft there.
A lot of wildcraft, a lot of something that I do not possess personally.
Yeah. Yes. All right. Finish the sentence for me. Life is better above or below the tree line.
Oh, well, it's definitely better below because it's the reason it's a tree line, because things die. So it's inherently, sorry, but scientifically speaking, inherent in the question, you have to answer below.
Buzz so pointing out so the literal. Obvious.
It's hard to be literal, but that's why it's tree line, because trees don't live up there.
But. Ordinarily, I'd score that as a deduction, but you were so factually correct in your interpretation of that question. I'm not sure how to go on that. All right. Now, the American Long Trails, the PCT, the AT, the CDT, they all run north-south or south-north. Should they be hiked northbound, southbound?
I always want to go downhill. Southbound. We look at the map. Right?
You're
going downhill. So yeah.
Okay. Let me do some quick math here. We're going to carry the three. We're going to divide by two, multiply by pi and square root there. And it comes out to a solid 83, Buzz. That's really respectable.
Okay. So I'm relatively sane.
Relatively sane, but we, you know, there's a lot of episode to go. So don't worry.
Okay.
All right. Hey, before we go much further, let's take a pause. Let's back up a little bit and hear about your background, where you grew up, what kind of sports and hobbies were you involved in as a kid, and how you got involved in the outdoor adventure / trail running cult.
Well, I grew up in Kalamazoo, Michigan, which I'm happy about. Michigan's a great state. And then when I graduated from high school, I applied to one school only. It was in Boulder, Colorado. So I went out to CU, University of Colorado, because there's a lot of Michiganders in Colorado because they all love the outdoors, but get tired of the bugs. And so they move out west. So that's what I did. But I was in the Boy Scouts. I was a happy Boy Scout. I liked it. It's kind of not a thing anymore. You never hear about it, but we used to go out camping. And we'd get hatchets and, you know, hack away at little things. And we'd swim. We'd row boats and read canoe. And I love the Boy Scouts. I really had a good time.
Yeah. A number of folks we talk to kind of get their outdoor experience start with the Boy Scouts. And here in Southern California, where I am, you know, we have Mount Baden Powell. It's one of the summits down here in Southern California, named after the founders of the Boy Scouts. And we have a number of, I think, trails. There's like a 50-mile trail that some of the scouts do as part of, you know, to earn their merit badges in the Angeles National Forest. So still pretty popular out here, I believe.
Good. Glad to hear that. I mean, it's terrific. You're 11 years old. You're going outside camping.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I was doing my research on you, I discovered what came across to me is a very Forrest Gump moment. Have you watched Forrest Gump?
Oh, yeah. That's a great movie. Soundtrack.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Epic. But he has a moment where he's dealing with stuff and he decides he's just going to run. And so he runs cross country. I don't know how many times, but, and then when he's done running, he says, you know, I'm done. You know, he stops running. And the moment that reminded me of that when I was doing my research on you was this 1968 run you did from Kalamazoo to Lake Michigan. And you were, I think you were 18 years old?
17
years old.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good one. Well, thanks for bringing that up. That was many moons ago, as we say, but that was a little bit of a Forrest Gump moment because it had this epic, it had this mythical quality to it. And of course, the Forrest Gump movie has extremely mythical quality. That's why it's so good. It doesn't have to be literal because it's still telling a story that, as Ken Kesey once said, it was true, even if it didn't happen. Ken Kesey quote. So I graduated from high school. It's like, what's up? I don't know what's up. I don't know what I'm going to do. I used to run and I had no interest in running in college and I had no interest in running competitively, even though I really liked it. And I wasn't really sure what it meant because there was no guideposts. There's no mentors. There's no magazines. There was no internet. There's no all kinds of things. So I was like, what's up? I don't know what's up. And so I had this affinity for the big lake, for the water. And I lived in Kalamazoo, Michigan, which was 40 miles from Lake Michigan. And I said, I'm just going to run to Lake Michigan. So I just walked out the door and ran to Lake Michigan and had my girlfriend at the time drive there and pick me up. It was, I guess, seen in today's context, it was a little different because I didn't bring any food or water. And it was July. So I just went, 40 miles, 90 degrees. Degrees, no food or water. But every once in a while, there'd be someone running a sprinkler in their yard. So I'd go over and get a drink out of that. But it's so hot, my bottom of my shoes got tar on them. So I had this half inch of black tar from the melting pavement built up on my shoes. But I made it to Lake Michigan. She picked me up and we later got married. But it was such a milestone, Doc, because at that point, and I think this is one of the epic aspects of running, that point I realized I could do anything. You see what I mean? I was in high school. I graduated from high school. And with that event, just pulling something out of the ether and manifesting it, I felt free. I felt free because I was not bound by the constraints of the hamster wheel of I'm supposed to do this, 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 and that to get that, right? There's this life thing. You're supposed to go to college, supposed to get a job, supposed to do this. And I was just out of that whole hamster wheel thing. I could manifest my vision in the world. And that was very relaxing to me. I felt relaxed. I felt free.
Nice. Now, had you done some running in high school? I mean, were you part of the track team or cross country team in high school?
I was. Yeah, it wasn't that good. It's too slow. I mean, the longest distance was 2 miles. I was like, dang, I'm just kind of getting going at 2 miles. So it turns out ultra running was helpful for me, but I didn't have any idea about that at the time. But, I ran a 4:36 mile, but I wasn't very good.
4:36 mile and you were slow, huh?
Yeah. I think I was pretty slow. I needed a longer distances.
Well, if you're slow, then I'm geologic. So, all right. Hey, we're going to take a quick break, Buzz. When we come back, we're going to hear some adventure stories and endurance feats of endurance from your past. So stay tuned for that. We'll be right back.
Great.
From the backcountry to the backyard, we believe everyone deserves the highest level of protection. Since 1984, Sawyer Products offers the best, most technologically advanced solutions for protection against sun, bugs, and water, using time-released liposome technology, topical insect repellents, and new standards in water filtration. And with every Sawyer product you buy, you are helping to provide clean water through 140 charities in 80 countries with their long-lasting water filters. Every Sawyer product you buy is an investment in our common humanity. Choose Sawyer and keep the adventure going, knowing that their products have been tested and chosen by those who count on serious protection on the trail all day long. Six Moon Designs has been innovating ultralight backpacking gear for the past 20 years. With a wide range of products ranging from ultralight shelters to backpacks and accessories like their extensive line of trekking umbrellas, Six Moon Designs is sure to have a great piece of gear for your needs. With the company philosophy being that gear should aid one's experience, not define it, Six Moon Designs thinks the more time people spend outside the natural world, the better off this world will be. And remember, go wild, live young. Want to make a podcast? Spotify's got a platform that lets you make one super easily, then distribute it everywhere, and even earn money. All in one place, for free. It's called Spotify for Podcasters, and here's how it works. Spotify for Podcasters lets you record and edit podcasts right from your phone or computer. So no matter what your setup is like, you can start creating today. Then you can distribute your podcast to Spotify and everywhere else podcasts are heard. Video podcasts are also available on Spotify. With Spotify for Podcasters, you can earn money in a variety of ways, including ads and podcast subscriptions. And best of all, it's totally free with no catch. Since I discovered Spotify for Podcasters, I feel like my creativity has raised to another level. I highly recommend you give it a try. Download the Spotify for Podcasters app or go to www.spotify.com/podcasters to get started. And welcome back. We are talking to Buzz Burrell and heard about his Forrest Gump moment and his realization that, you know, being able to do something like that, he's able to do anything. And I think that is what we hear a lot from some of our guests who do these amazing long hikes, who do these ultra endurance events, that, you know, there's something about being on the trail and turning back at the end of a day and looking backwards and seeing how far you've come and realizing the power of incremental progress and the fact that, you know, if you can do this, you can do a lot of things.
Yeah,
I realize that wasn't a question, but, you know, feel free to chime in if you like.
No, it's good. It's interestingly enough, in a certain sense, the older one gets, the less one feels like giving advice because everyone's going to live their life, right? So I think when you're young, you kind of get a little pushy. It's like, oh yeah, I got to do this. At this point, it's like, yeah, you're going to figure it out. Everyone listening to this is going to figure it out. It's all good. It's going to go great.
Now, in my research, I came across your Hall of Fame bio in the USATF.
Wow, good work.
Thank you. Thanks. And I found this statement. It says your running specialty is running what no one has before. Literally.
Yeah. That's true. I think, like I said, I'm not fast, but I never really tried to be fast to other people. I just did things other people couldn't do at all. That was kind of where I really went. I really never quite self-described as a runner. I self-describe as an adventurer. That's essentially what I do. And I've always used numerous modalities of transportation to do that, self-transportation. So the last year I did 4 bicycle races, for example. I got into surf ski kayaking. So I do occasional kayak race. I've done climbing. I once competed in ballroom dancing. I've done snowshoe races, classic ski races, Nordic ski races. I used to race Telmark through the gates for a very brief time. So I'm not particular. I just like to move with a degree of efficiency through natural landscapes.
Buzz, I'm realizing something here, and that is that we're going to have you back on, because the John Freaking Muir Pod is all about the outdoor adventure tree. And there's all kinds of different branches on the outdoor adventure tree, you know, through hiking, ultra endurance racing. Those are just 2 different branches. There are so many other different branches. And, you know, we're going to talk about some of your adventures here having to do with, you know, ultra endurance and endurance running. But there are so many other things that you just mentioned that I am so interested in. And I know that our listeners would be interested in. We're going to have to reschedule some more time later on if you're willing.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay. Hey, let's talk about this thing I referred to earlier. I came across is called credit card adventures.
Yeah.
And I came across this, was it a run that you did from Silverthorne to Boulder, which is about 95 miles.
And it was, I think you nicknamed it a credit card adventure. What happened there?
Well, this is perplexing because this is, to me, such a good idea. It's so obvious, but you don't hear about it very often. I'm really surprised. And of course, you do a lot with backpacking through hiking, et cetera, et cetera. And people are trying to, you know, pare down their weight, like base weight. You know, when I was a kid, it's always how big the car engine was. Then 20 years later, how big your CPU unit was in your computer. Now it's like your base weight. And you want your base weight to be at 8 pounds and so forth. But, you know, your base weight can be a fifth of an ounce. You just take the Visa card. that's really the lightest pack there is. And so a friend was going up into Summit County, and I said, "Hey, can I get a ride?" She gave me a ride up there, just dropped me off. And I just started to head back towards Boulder, and it's really great routes. It's all pretty high mountains, and come down into Winter Park and just whip out the little piece of plastic. Like I said, it's a fifth of an ounce. That weighs a lot less than a sleeping bag in a tent. You go in there, you take a shower, you kind of have to put the same clothes back on, which is a little funky. But then, you know, you go out and get a burger and a beer and have a really comfortable night and get their little free little donuts, their free little muffins and their crummy breakfast last you. Then you just head back to Boulder, get back there by dinner time. So the credit card run, I think, is a very viable way to take a trip. Hasn't really caught on. I'm surprised.
We've talked to different people about various types of challenges. As you're talking about the credit card adventure, I think if it's a credit card challenge, I think Mike Wardian talked about the state-a-thon where he would try and cross an entire state through various means of self-propulsion, you know, whether it's bike riding or, and a combination of, you know, bike riding, running, swimming, whatever. And then also had a guy on from Outside Channel. And it was his TV show was Beat Monday. And he talked about the picnic. You heard about the picnic in Jackson Hole?
Yep. That's the original picnic. Yep. You bike up from Jackson to Ginny Lake, swim across Ginny Lake, climb
Grand,
come back down, repeat.
Yes. Yes. Some crazy challenges out there, but I like the idea of the credit card adventure. You are ultralight. There's no need to drill holes in your toothbrush to get rid of the grams. You're just carrying the credit card along with maybe a rain shell and doing your endurance event and checking into a nice motel somewhere in between. So makes sense.
It does too. Now you're not going to get off into a lot of wilderness. So there's a, you know, Utah, that'd be a little harder, but yeah, it's really viable.
Okay. And you also have an interesting take on the rim to rim to rim hike. I think you have an alternate. I think it's a R2R2R.alt you have coined.
Thank you. Yeah, that's an incredibly good route because I've done rim to rim to rim before. It's one of the classic routes in the world, which is generally the south rim to the river. That's R2R. And then to R, the north rim, then back down to the river, then back up to the south rim. So it's a double crossing of the Grand Canyon and the north and south Kaibab trails. Outstanding route. It's terrific. And it works because there's a bridge at the bottom. That's the only bridge. And it got a little weird for a while. Like tour groups were coming in with buses and dropping them off at the north rim, and people would run down and run across and the bus and pick him up. And this just pains me to say this. And like they were littering, they drop a goo wrapper at the bottom. It's like, no, we don't do that. Right. And I talked to the rangers, who are pretty good people, you know, and they're like stressing on this. Like they'd have to rescue people who are ill prepared. They didn't bring enough water. And it's like, no, I get irked about this because as outdoor users, we have to take care of ourselves. We have to protect the resource. This is the starting point. And they got a little crowded. They're talking about doing permits. And so I said, well, you know, there is another route that crosses the Grand Canyon. And it's the Bass Trail. It's the North and South Bass Trail. And it has almost the same elevation profile as the North and South Kaibab Trail. It's almost the same distance and vert. There's just no bridge. So it keeps the riffraff out immediately. So I called it rim to rim to rim alt. And Peter Backman and I did it. And it's a terrific route. Just got to swim the river twice. So it's a little bit of issue there. And then other people went back and did it significantly faster. The Coconino Cowboys, Jim Walmsley, they went and did it. And then Rob Krar and Footy, Mike Foote from Montana, they did it really quickly. And Peter and I, you know, we were putting on really thin, lightweight wetsuits because the water's coming out from underneath the Glen Canyon Dam. The water's 54 degrees. And they forego the wetsuits. They just jumped in, and then they got an incredible photo of Rob jumping in wearing his birthday suit. That I've always joked, if we need to do an ultra running calendar, and he would be Mr. January for sure. It's a really good photo if you want to track this one down. At any rate, I am very pleased with rim to rim to rim alt. But anyone listening to this, don't say, hey, I'm going to go out and do it, because I do want to offer a serious disclaimer here. Sometimes you hear people, well, people like myself, kind of laughing and joking about risking their lives and doing wild and crazy things. I don't do that, just to be clear. I am a very risk-averse person. I just kind of want to state this solidly here. There's many times I've turned back from trips because I didn't feel it was appropriate or safe. So it's not cool to go out there and require a rescue. It's not cool to go out there and get hurt. So respect the environment, respect your abilities, please. I'm doing a little essay here. Hope you don't mind. And as Killian Jornet said numerous times, develop your skill set. Work into it, get some experience, particularly in the big ditch, which I was just there recently. I'm going to be back there shortly. It's a different environment. It's hot, it's dry, it's big, it's wild. And so work into the big routes gradually, because it's all about nature anyway. It's not about your ego. And so take your time and learn your environment.
Great advice. Almost sounds like a pro tip. You're still on the hook for a pro tip later on, so don't think you're getting off easy here. But let's go back to that river crossing. What kind of river crossing are we talking? How wide, how deep, how fast is the water moving?
Kind of looks like your background there a little bit. No, it's a little bigger than that. That's in the Sierras. That looks like granite there. So that's pretty thin. I take that back. The Grand is, of course, dammed up by two giant dams, two biggest dams in North America. I mean, in the West, Glen Canyon and Hoover Dam, and it's above Hoover and below Glen Canyon. So water's coming out underneath the Glen Canyon Dam, so it's kind of cold, if you see what I mean, because the cold water sinks to the bottom, and it's regulated. And so formerly, you used to have big, strong spring flows from the runoff, and then it was really thin by midsummer into the next spring. But now it's all dam release for hydroelectric generating, so there's a constant flow. So it's coming in. I forgot the CFS now. I can't think of it, but it's way over your head. So that's fording is not a thing. That can't happen. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of rapids. You really don't want to swim through the rapids. So you need to cross at a place where it's relatively calm. There's still current, but there won't be rapids. Grand Canyon, the Colorado River in general, is generally what's called a pool and drop river. It means there's side canyons coming down that occasionally flash flood. They wash big boulders out, and they form this impairment to the river flow. And those form really strong rapids right at the side canyon. But backed up from that, it's kind of a pool where it's relatively calm, although there is current. And so you definitely want to swim across in the pool section and get to the other side before you get to the rapid section, but you are going downhill. You're downstream. And so you do what's called ferrying. If you go, if here's the river, and if you aim for there, you're actually going to end up there. So it's kind of like a triangle. So you're going to end up, you're going to kind of want to try to aim a little bit upstream, because you're actually going to be going downstream while you're swimming across. When you come back, you want to hike back up, forming sort of a triangle, because you're going to end up at the same spot that you started from originally. But, you know, Rob and Footy did it fine with no wetsuit. They just hit it hard and they were all good. So you can do it.
very detailed explanation. I appreciate that. The aiming a little bit upstream and being swept a little bit down as you're going. That sounds like me on a Saturday night trying to get to the bathroom. So I totally understand that.
Well, like I said, one might present this cavalier, happy-go-lucky, fun attitude. People have done things with me know that actually on the inside, I research very carefully. I consider things and I'm very tactical and strategic. And that, oops, we don't want to give advice too early in the podcast. Sorry.
No, it's okay. You can give advice throughout, but you're still on the hook for one at the end. So there you go. All right. Hey, let's move on. You alluded to it earlier with your mention of FKT. Let's talk about FKT, what that concept is, how you came up with the concept, and you are basically the creator of the FKT.
I call myself, along with Peter Backman, the popularizer.
Popularizer, okay.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a generic term. We don't own the IP on it. Right. And I think one of the reasons it instantly became so popular after we introduced it to the public is because it makes sense. You know, there's records running the Olympics. There's 100,000 people watching. There's officials with their little stopwatches. But an FKT is you and your Garmin and submitting it to the website, your Strava track or whatever your GPX file might be. But when I got going on it is when Peter and I set the FKT in the John Muir Trail. This was the year 2000, and we researched the bejesus out of it. I spent like weeks trying to figure out who had the fastest time in this. I called up Jim Knight. I talked to Blake Wood. I talked to Tim Twitmire, all the people there. And it was really, really hazy. But one thing that came out quite evidently for me, Doc, is that when you go back, you don't get to a starting point. It keeps going. People have been doing this forever. There wasn't the first person to go fast in the JMT. There's the first person you knew about. You see what I mean?
Got it.
And so at each stage of the game, it was the fastest known time. It was completely literal statement. It made perfect sense. You couldn't guarantee it. Now with the internet, I think things are a lot more buttoned up. Nowadays, people can do something, you know, in Nepal, Malaysia, and you hear about it, you know, 30 minutes later. But back then, someone could have done something huge. You wouldn't find out until a year later, and only if three other people roundabout told you about it. So fastest known time, I thought, made a lot of sense, had a lot of logic to it, and it was honest. It was authentic. It represented what we were really doing.
Right. And what was your time on the JMT?
Well, Peter and I were going for sub-4. That's what we wanted to do. I had my spreadsheet
For our listeners out there, he's not talking sub-4 months or sub-4 weeks. He's talking sub-4 days.
Absolutely. No, sub-4 days was that I really wanted it. We could do it. You created this. The spreadsheet, and then I calculated, of course, there's the distance. I added in the vert. I added in how difficult that section is, the trail, and put a little multiplier in there. So I had the different checkpoints, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it was going to go sub-4 days, which has been a full day. The record near as I could tell was 5. And we wanted to take an entire day off that. And we got walloped by a storm on Tuolumne Pass. It was just crushed. I mean, you couldn't even stay outside on it. They closed the pass, by the way. They closed Tioga Pass, the highway. And so we had to lay up for the night and just jogged it in the next day. So we came in at like 4.5 days. Oh, well, Peter went back by himself the next year and went some 4 days in the GMT, the first person to do it.
Wow, that's incredible. I've spent a lot of time on the JMT. It is not easy terrain. I have some friends that I've made on the podcast here, Gabe and Kevin, who met at the Moab 240. They were ultra endurance runners, and they thought, you know what, we're going to run the JMT. And Gabe's wife gave him a week, said, you can take a week off to go do this. And so they said, okay, well, it's no problem. We're just going to run the JMT. They got to the JMT and quickly discovered they couldn't run the entirety of the JMT. But they did it in, I think, 5.5 days. 5.5 days, 6 days. And they because they couldn't run it, they couldn't maintain that speed. So they had to extend their day. So they were, you know, it was getting up at 2 a.m. and hiking until, you know, 10 at night, but they got it done. Was that your approach as well? Or were you, how much of the GMT did you run?
We ran a fair amount of it.
Mm-hmm.
We were fairly fit, and the people who came before us actually were better runners. Like Tim Twitmire run one Western States 100 four or five times. I can't remember. Blake Wood is one of the best runners there is in anything. And he had come before us, but Peter and I brought something else to the table. We were very good in the backcountry. Other people were kind of fast packing it, which means they're carrying a lot more gear than we were. And they were spending a little more time off at night and moving maybe a little faster when they're on the trail. But Peter and I were comfy at night. We're comfy at altitude and we're comfy on technical terrain. And so we had greatly reduced packs because when it comes to, as you know, from through hiking and hiking, you want a low pack weight, but when it's running, it's times two because the definition of running is both feet are off the ground at some point. Uh-huh. So there's a lot of lift. There's a lot of up and down. So just an extra 2 pounds while running kind of gets to you. So I think that's what Peter and I brought to the table is not extra fitness, but being pretty solid backcountry people so we could have a lighter pack. And then we could use the relentless forward motion concept, which was later popularized to great effect by Brett Mauney, who did set the record on it. And coming in as a non-runner, people didn't believe him, which kind of relates to your podcast here, Doc. And I could get on and out about this, but generally speaking, top ultra runners get schooled on the long trails. It's not general. It's not like always. I'm trying to think of when that didn't happen. It's, you know, it's the hikers after a certain length of time, say 7 days, maybe 10 days, the really good through hikers are faster than the really good ultra runners because the really good ultra runners are arrogant. Like your two friends said, "Oh, I'm arrogant." No, and they don't study it. They don't do the homework. And your really good through hikers, they're doing their homework. They're more studious. They're more methodical. And of course, the person who really turned my head was Flying Brian. You know, Flying Brian Robinson.
Robinson, yeah.
The mm-hmm. first calendar triple crown, who I literally just corresponded with this morning because I'm in Monterey right now where he lives still. Super good guy. But Peter and his wife, Steph, and I went out and did a day on the Continental Divide Trail with Flying Brian. During his calendar triple crown, we were like, oh, this guy's onto something, right? I just love it when that, I just love
yes.
it. It's not, just like I was saying like 30 minutes ago, it's not trying to do something faster. It's doing something different. He was out of the box that we were aware of. And that almost extends to this day. It's relentless forward motion. It's how many hours a day are you moving forward? It's not how fast you're moving. It's how many hours a day you're moving forward. It's the old tortoise and the hare thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Flying Brian would get up in the morning and just, of course, he was a tarp guy. And he would just jam everything in. And 10 minutes after waking up, he'd be moving. And he had his shorts with pockets and he just start eating dry granola while he's walking. And at noon, he's just eating Snicker bars. And so he's doing 16-hour days every day by himself.
Right.
And he's knocking down the miles. So that's an aside, but I appreciate people like that.
Yes. And calendar year triple crowners, that's a rarer breed than Barkley marathon finishers.
I think. Well, no, because Flying Brian had the record at the Barkley.
Yes, but there have been more people who have finished the Barkley than have finished the calendar year triple crown. There's only 13, only 13 finishers of the calendar year triple crown.
Oh, good statistic. I love it. I love it. We're tying the threads together here, aren't we?
Because it's all coming together.
Brian did go back to Barkley and Brett Mauney went back to Barkley too. Brett finished Barkley twice. So yeah, it's a certain personality type here, isn't it?
Yes. Jeff Garmeyer goes by Legend, trail name Legend. He did the calendar year triple crown and he did the Barkley last year and was unable to complete a loop. Just a different environment back there. Now, JMT, do you enjoy your time on the JMT and your attempt at the FKT?
Yeah, we did.
How about, I know you've had some other numerous other attempts of and setting the FKT in other, other places, Colorado Trail, Torres del Paine. Any favorites among those? Well, the ones that I didn't mention?
I get asked this question. I'm going to give you my little, it's not trying to be flippant. My favorite trail definitely is the next one.
Oh, that is so Tom Brady. That is so Tom Brady. Tom Brady said his favorite ring is the next one.
I didn't know that. That's good one. That's good. But I'm sorry. People ask me this question, but gosh, yeah, it's, I mean, like I said, I'm primarily an adventurer. So I'm looking what's around the next corner. Just last year, where are we now? 11 months ago, Peter Backwin and I did the Butte Fault Loop in the Grand Canyon. Kind of a gnarly route. It was a little stouter than we expected. It's mostly off trail. And so we still like to get out there and do some fun things. And here are we are, March. Three or four weeks, I'm going to do either the Escalante Overland route in Utah with Peter, or I'm trying to actually convince them to do something different for us, really different. Section hike, which we've never done, the Hayduk.
I was going to mention the Hayduk to you. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I've never even thought of that. It's like section hike. I don't know what section hike, but it's like, you know, this would be cool at my age to just embark on pieces of this and do it over the span of 4 or 5 years. It gave me something to look forward to and just give a rhythm to my life. And I own a house in Moab now anyway. And so I can slack pack it. I mean, to me, you know, George Washington, Hayduk, the Monkey Wrench Gang, hopefully everyone knows who this
right.
is.
If not, yep.
Better figure this one out. And this isn't like the AT. No. I mean, in the AT, if you set foot off the trail, you know, someone's, you know, watching you on your live track. They go, hey, the guy stood off the trail. You know, it's really buttoned up. And that's great. So that's how FKTs can happen, like the PCT and the AT, because it's a distinct trail. Hey, dude, no. This isn't how I see it. I mean, just do whatever you want. I mean, that's the tradition here. Go out, enjoy the CP, the Colorado Plateau. You know, go into Escalante, drink some beer with the locals. Go into Boulder, Utah, which has the best restaurant in the whole state of Utah, by the way, run by two Buddhist women. And just, you know, enjoy the area. That's my way of looking at it. And the first part, the first section of it goes from Arches National Park through Moab, you know, over Hurrah Pass, etc. I'm just going to slack pack it. I'm going to get dropped off of there. I'm just going to run home, take a hot shower, eat some good food, and then go back to the trail and continue. You see what I mean?
Yeah. You probably just need your iPhone and a credit card.
Right. I mean, of course, in the world of FKT, I see all this. I see there's supported, there's unsupported, there's self-supported. People really get into this, which is fair. Mm-hmm. We need to sort this out. I'm totally down with it. But purity is sort of an interesting concept. Peter and I have both said this so many times. People are asking us, well, is this supported or unsupported? They always want to do it unsupported. It's like, do what works best. Do what works best for you. You know, if doing it with a friend or having your husband come out, have him come out. That won't make it unsupported, you know, because you had someone come out with you. But if that supports family time, that's, to me, more important. Sorry. So do what works for you. And if I do the Hayduk in sections, that's certainly what I'm going to do.
Nice. Now, we heard that you sold FKT to Outside Inc.
Yep.
And so what are your current endeavors? What are you focusing on now?
I'm becoming, it's like Hollywood Squares. Remember that TV show?
Yes.
I'm just like this celebrity.
You're Paul Lynn.
Okay. Right. Who's done something, but no one said, who is this guy? Apparently he's a celebrity. He must have done something, but I have no idea what it is. So I'm just a professional podcast guest now. It's what I'm doing.
Fantastic. You didn't tell me you're a professional. I have no money to pay you. I apologize.
Well, okay. Well, we'll let it go this time.
Okay. Whew. All right.
The pro tip insight of the week.
Hey, Buzz, you know where we are?
You're going to ask me the trick question.
I'm going to ask you for your pro tip insight of the week. What bit of trail wisdom or outdoor wisdom can you share with our listeners to make their next experience even better outside?
Okay. Well, thank you. I'm happy to answer this. It'll be the same answer, but kind of three phases of it. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
This is kind of, it's kind of meaningful to me. So take care of yourself, your community, and the earth. That's it for me. You really have to take care of yourself, you know, particularly where I'm at. This becomes very, very important. You can have a training plan, you can do this, this, and that, but unless you have health, none of it has any meaning whatsoever. And then we all live together. We all share this earth. Courtesy is contagious. Be nice to the person next to you. Respect the person next to you. And lastly, the same thing for Mother Earth. I mean, we're all breathing the same air, all drinking the same water. So let's please take care of what we've been blessed with.
Everybody takes that pro tip to heart, then we're all in a better place. Outstanding. All right. So there you have it. That's it. This episode is just about in the books. Hope our listeners enjoyed our time with Buzz. Want to thank him for joining us this week. Buzz, how can our listeners keep up with you on social media, and where can they find updates on your latest adventures? I tried looking for you on social media. I couldn't find you. I had to track down your email address.
Correct. I am not on Twitter. I'm not on Instagram. You know, it's a viable thing. Social media is a giant, huge happening thing, but the length of that conversation is a little frustrating for me. I sort of like to have longer conversations than that. I am on Facebook, however, and I post like once a month. So you can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Strava.
Okay.
Social media network for athletes.
With a fair degree of self-consciousness, I will then say, remember to check out the pod on social media as well. We are on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And if you have comments or clips you want to share, you can send it to me at johnfreakymuir@gmail.com.
The Adventure Media Recommendation.
Buzz, I'm also looking to you to share a recommendation for a book, a movie, documentary, some sort of outdoor media that's going to keep our listeners connected to the outdoor experience. We're calling this our Adventure Media Recommendation. What do you have for us?
Dang, that's a heck of a question, isn't it? You caught me a little off guard with that. The movie that, in terms of media, this is, I guess it actually technically it is outdoor. Summer of Soul. It just won the Academy Award for Best Documentary, but I saw it at the Chautauqua Auditorium this summer, and it's the Black Woodstock, they call it. You got Nina Simone, you got Stevie Wonder, you got Sly and the Family Stone. So pardon me, I think these are epic people. I love singing and dancing. I like music, so hopefully that suffices.
Absolutely. Summer of Soul, was that the poor documentary that was being introduced by Chris Rock?
Yes, and he pulled it together.
He did. But there was a bit of distraction before they received their award, which is really unfortunate.
That was Delusions of Grandeur by Will Smith. Movie star thought you could get away with anything, and maybe will get away with it. But it was funky, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I agree. Totally agree. And I'll also throw out there, because you mentioned it earlier, I'll throw out another recommendation that really made an impact on me. It sticks with me to this day, and that is The Monkey Wrench Gang by Edward Abbey.
Yeah.
That was quite a read. I think about it occasionally, and some of the scenes in that book, and really memorable. And of course, one of the characters is George Hayduke, after whom the Hayduke Trail is named. So check that out as well.
And I can't believe Robert Redford's never made a movie, The Monkey Wrench Gang. It's so ready for that type of thing. But he also should mention what he's best known for is Desert Solitaire, which is a lot more serious book. Edward Abbey, I should say.
Yes.
That was when he was a ranger at Arches National Park.
Okay, so we get a threefer. We got Summer of Soul, we got Monkey Wrench Gang, and Desert Solitaire?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
What have we not asked you?
And before we wrap things up, I've got just one more segment for you called What Have I Not Asked You That You're Dying to Tell Us About? What do we miss?
Dang. Wow. Well, I, multi-sport. mentioned a few sports there. I used to compete in beach volleyball also, but dancing, and given a choice, swing dancing is still one of the most fun things there is to do. That's the one that kind of comes out of the blue that not a lot of people talk about.
Ultra endurance athlete and swing dancer. Nice. Well, that is a wrap from the John Freaky Muir studio. Any shout outs to friends and family, Buzz?
Gosh, the community. You know, I had the fastest known podcast, 180 episodes, and during the pandemic, I didn't feel alone. Maybe you feel this as well,
same,
Doc.
Same way.
I'm with friends. I'm just with this group of friends, and I'm just so appreciative of this community. People are so nice. They're so warm. They're so attentive, and I am just blessed to be part of this community. So my shout out is everyone who's listening to this, and specifically to you. So hopefully support Doc. You know, people sometimes, we sold Fastest Known Times. Oh, you've kind of sold out to this corporate interest. You should have kept it small. I said, well, were you donating? You know, you vote with your dollar. And so please vote. And so if you like what Doc's doing, vote to support him. Then he'll keep doing it. If you don't support him, presumably he'll stop. That's kind of how the world works. So thank you for what you are doing, Doc. I appreciate you.
Oh, thank you, Buzz. That very kind words. I appreciate that. And I have to ask, Fastest Known Podcast, is it like each episode like 3 minutes?
30 to 50, basically.
30 to 50. Okay. I'm gonna tune in. I'm listening to the back catalog. It's gonna be on my list.
Okay.
Excellent. All right. Thank you for tuning in. Always remember, the trail is the trail. It doesn't care if you want to go downhill. It doesn't care if it's almost dark and you're looking for a campsite. It doesn't even care if you're looking to set the FKT on the JMT and a storm has rolled in. The trail is the trail. Embrace the suck.